All right, Tabosai, good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Lamed Gimel. Beautiful daf ahead of us today. We are starting Lamed Beis Amud Beis Rav Papa. 2, 4, 6, 8 lines up from the bottom. So remember, again, we're in the middle of dealing with the case of with the statement of Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi was the one who said we started off yesterday with the case of a person who walks into the store, to the shop of a nagar, of a carpenter, and ultimately again gets hit with a splinter of wood. So Rabbi Yossi said, so the Braisa paskind, that ultimately the nagar, the carpenter, is going to be potter from galus. So again, remember we had a machlokes as to what exactly the case that that's referring to is. Is that a case where the nagar, where the carpenter invited the person in, where the person walked in without rishos? Similarly, Rabbi Yossi said, that if instead of killing the individual, the nagar injured the individual, so the nagar, the carpenter, is chayiv dalad dvarim, is chayiv in the four categories of damages. So both say, so now we're trying to clarify exactly what case are we talking about where you're chayiv in four categories of damages. So Rav Papa is the name of Rava. Masni la aresha. He went ahead and said that Rabbi Yossi's statement actually refers to the resha. What's the case of the resha? Hanichnas lechanuso shel nagar shelo b'rishus. Oh, was like a person enters into the carpenter's shop without rishus, without the permission ultimately of the carpenter. V'nitzalo bakas, and a piece of a wood chip flies out. V'tavchalo apanov, and ultimately goes ahead and hits the guy in the face. Umes. And the individual who walked in is Potter. Umeis, and the individual who walks in dies, Potter. So ultimately, the nagar, the carpenter, is going to be Potter. So now the Gemara is saying over here, this is a case where the individual is walking in without rishos, without the permission of the carpenter. Here, Amr Abiyosi Bar Chanina, Chayiv Arba Advar. In this case over here, if the individual walked in without rishos, and instead of being killed, was injured, the halacha would be that the carpenter would be Chayiv Vidal Advarim. Upater Migalos. But if he kills the individual, ultimately he would be Potter from Galos. Man de Masni La Seif. But Rabosai, again, bless you. In this version over here, we're putting it on the Seifa. I mean, the Seifa is the case where what? Where the individual is walking in without rishos. So man de Masni La Seifa. So Rabosai, if in a case where the individual is walking in without the permission of the Nagar, and yet, again, Rabbi Yossi is paskening that the Nagar is still going to be Chayi B'dalet Dvarim, all the more so what? Kol Shekein HaReisha. All the more so, Rabbi Yossi, what? If the individual walked in with the rishus of the carpenter, then of course the individual is going to be liable. Uman demasni la reisha, but the one who said ultimately that in the reisha, the case where the nagar, where the carpenter invited the person in, that's where he's chayiv dalet dvarim. Aval haseifa, keivan de rishus chayiv galus. But the seifa case, since the individual is walking in with the rishus of the nagar, if the nagar kills him, ultimately again the nagar, the carpenter, would be chayiv galus. But is that true? Then the circumstance of this was, what you're suggesting is that if the nagar, if the carpenter invites the person in and accidentally kills the individual, that the individual, that the nagar is subject to galus, is that true? Vatanya, we learned, hanichnas lechanuso shel nafach v'nitzal nitzotzos v'tavchalo apanov umeis. If a person walks into a blacksmith's shop, and what happens? As the blacksmith is smithing, I guess that's the right verb, he's smithing, so what happens? What? Same thing, as makes sense. He's smithing, and a spark flies out, hits the guy in the face, and he dies. Now, but remember again, I want to be clear. This is hanichnas lechanuso shel nafach v'nitzal nitzotzos v'tavchalo apanov umeis. Potter. Ultimately, the blacksmith is potter from galus. Va'afilu nichnas v'rishus. Even if the individual walked in with the permission of the blacksmith. So what do you see from here? So we were assuming that when the owner of the shop invites the person in, so therefore again, and then accidentally kills him, that would be a case, you'd be chayiv galus. Yet here we're seeing that in this case, where the blacksmith invites the person in, spark kills the individual, that the blacksmith is potter from galus. To which the owner says, no, how come I ask, you know, what's the case? We're talking about a blacksmith's apprentice. It's the blacksmith's apprentice who's killed, and that's why he's potter. To which the Gemara says, "Sholya denafchi lemikvilakoi." I don't understand. The blacksmith's apprentice signs up to die. In other words, his life is somehow different than anyone else's life. To which the Gemara says, "No. The case of his kishraba mesarei bolotzeis veino yotze." Well, say the case over here is where the blacksmith, the apprentice, is in the shop. The master blacksmith is telling the student he has to leave. Ve'ino yotze, and the blacksmith and the apprentice doesn't leave, and then is subsequently killed. In a case like that, the blacksmith will be potter from galus. To which the Gemara says, "Umishum derabo mesarei bolotes lemiktalekoi." Again, so because the blacksmith told him to leave and he didn't leave, if he kills him accidentally, the blacksmith should be parted from Galus. Does that make sense? Kasavar Yotza. The case of Osei is where the blacksmith told the student to leave, the blacksmith assumed his student left, and he accidentally killed him. And obviously, he turned out that he didn't leave, and accidentally killed him. In a case like that, he's going to be parted from Galus. If that's the case, so why are you only framing this case as a case of the blacksmith's apprentice? Let's say we're dealing with a situation where someone was in the shop, the blacksmith told the individual, get out. Blacksmith thought the individual left, afterwards accidentally killed the guy. The Bryce is ruling he's putter from Galus. Why do you have to set this up as dealing dafka with the apprentice? Top of Lamed Gimel. Achar lesle imsa derabe. Hai isle imsa derabe. So let's say here's the difference. The difference is that the apprentice has a certain fear of the blacksmith, right? Fear is the wrong word. It's certain reverence, certain covet. And therefore, the assumption is that when the blacksmith tells the apprentice to leave, what's going to happen? He's going to leave. He's going to listen. And therefore, again, the blacksmith therefore assumes that the apprentice is no longer there. And therefore, if he subsequently kills him, it's b'shogeg. And therefore, again, I'm sorry, it's more than shogeg. It's more kav la'ones. Ultimately, it'll be parted from Galus. Someone else, when the blacksmith tells him to leave, the blacksmith has to be sure that the person actually complied, and therefore, lemaisa, if he ends up killing him, that would be a case of shogeg, says the Gemara Vayter. So, Rav Zvid Mishmei Dirava, Masni La'ahav. So, Rav Zvid, name of Rava, he went ahead and understood Rav Yossi's statement in the following context. Matza, remember the pasuk says over here, when talking about the person who kills b'shogeg, so the Torah says, v'nashal ha-barzel min ha'itz, the guy is chopping wood, and ultimately the axe head falls off of the handle, Matza esrei ehu, and the axe head meets his friend. Right? The axe head meets his friend. So let's say a short-lived encounter, right? So again, the axe head meets the friend and ultimately kills him. So the Gemara says, what do you mean the lashon of matzah? Prat lamam tzias atzmo. We both said, this is very interesting. This comes to exclude a case of what? Where a person makes himself known to the damaging object. What does that mean? So let's say, so the way the Torah is setting this up is that ultimately the person's chopping wood and the axe head meets the individual. Prat, this comes to exclude a case where essentially a person inserts himself in harm's way. What's the case? Mikan Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Misha Yatasa Eben Mitachas Yado, Vahotzi Halo Es Rosha V'Kibla Potter. But listen to this case. Reuven throws a stone, and at the time he throws the stone, Shimon is nowhere to be found. After the stone leaves Reuven's hand, what happens? Shimon pops his head out the window, is struck by the stone, and ultimately is killed. Both say in a case like that, Reuven will be potter from Galus. Why is Reuven potter from Galus? Because the Lashon of Umatza tells me that in order for a person to be subject to Galus, ultimately the individual who is ultimately killed must have been present at the time that the danger was initiated. So for example, again, at the time when the individual is pulling back the axe, the chop, the other guy is already there. But Masha Inkin, if he threw the stone and the coast was clear, and then Shimon sticks his head out after the stone left Reuven's hand, that's the case where he's going to be patur from Galus. Amar Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, patur migalus v'chayei b'arba dvarim. Oh, so this case, Rabbi Yossi Chanina would say it's true. He's patur from Galus, but if it turns out that Reuven threw the stone, and what happens? Shimon stuck his head out afterwards. So in a case like that, if Reuven kills Shimon, Reuven will be patur from Galus. But if Reuven doesn't kill Shimon, but instead what? Injures Shimon, Reuven will be chayev in dalad dvarim. Saman demasni la'aho kol shekina kamaisa. So also the one who sets up Rabbi Yossi's statement as dealing with this, in this case, in other words, of the guy who sticks his head out of the window and saying that he's chayev dal dvarim, certainly will go ahead and agree with the earlier case. So we'll say the earlier case is the one who walks into the shop of the nagar, of the carpenter, where ultimately, again, the carpenter sees him there, and therefore should have been more careful. So we'll say, so again, let's read that once more. Man the masni la'aha, the one who says ultimately that you're chayv and dal dvarim, in this case, where Reuven throws the stone, Shimon is nowhere to be found, Shimon then sticks his head out the window and is injured by the stone. So Rabbi Yossi paskins in that case that Reuven is chayv and dal dvarim, Reuven is chayv and damages. So the one who says that Reuven is chayv in that case will certainly say what? That if somebody walks into the carpenter's store and the carpenter sees him and then subsequently damages him, certainly in that case, it will be chayev dalet dvarim as well. Why? Because we must say, in the stone case, Reuben wasn't even aware of the presence of Shimon. Oh, Shimon wasn't even there. And yet, halacha still is that if Shimon sticks his head out of the window, gets damaged, Reuben is chayev dalet dvarim. Certainly in the carpenter case, where what? Where the carpenter sees the individual walk into his store, if he damages him, he will certainly be chayev for dalet dvarim, for the four categories of damages. I'm sorry? No, so that won't be Chayiv Golos. That won't be Chayiv. Again, well, that depends. That'll go back to the Rishus or Shalob Rishus. So the Gemara says, Uman Demasni Lo Akamaisa, and the one who says that Chayiv Dal Dvarim in the case of the carpenter, Aval Aha Pater Legamrei, will say that in this case will be totally Pater. Why? Because we'll say in this case, remember, again, Reuven has no idea, Reuven has no reason to assume that Shimon is anywhere in the vicinity, because at the time he throws the rock, he doesn't see Shimon. Shimon sticks his head out subsequently. In that case, Reuven will be Pater altogether. Fine. Tan Rabbanan. Paulim Shab, this is also, that's a very interesting case. Paulim Shabbat Litvas Charami Balabais. Workers come into the, listen to this. Let's say, again, you have a group of workers who work for Reuven. They come into Reuven's house to go ahead and collect their wages. Binakhan Shoro Shabalabais. And what happens? As the workers are there to collect their wages, they get gored. They get gored by the ox of the Balabas. Or good laugh. That's a sensitive group over here. Vinashkan Kabo Shabalabais. Or what happens? Or they get bitten by the dog of the Balabas. So most I say the case over here is the workers are coming to the property of the Balabas to collect the wages that are owed to them. When they show up to collect their wages, they get gored by the Balabas' ox or bitten by his dog, Umes. And I will say they died. Let's say the worker dies as a result. So what's the halacha? Pater. Ultimately, again, the Balabas will be pater. Achirim omrim, the others say, Achirim say, Rashan polin litvas charani balabayis. So ultimately, others say, so the logic of the one who says pater sounds like what? Why is the Balabas pater? Because essentially, what right do they have to walk into his rishus? So you know, when you walk onto someone's property, and you're not invited, ultimately, again, if you get damaged, you brought that on yourself because you're effectively trespassing. So the first opinion says, Nebuch, it said that the employee was killed, but Lamaisa he entered on his own risk. Second opinion says, Achirim omrim rashon pon litvos chami balabais. Second opinion, Achirim say no, that a worker has a right to claim his wages from his employer, and therefore again he has a right to show up at the employer's residence to go ahead and what? To go ahead and claim the money. To which the Gemara says, hey Chidami, so what's the case? So what's the case? If the Balabas is normally found in the city, in other words, that if the workers have the opportunity to ask for their wages in the city, meaning they don't have to show up at the Balabas' house, they could just go out and find them in the city, then my time would dachir. Then again, Rabbi will say, what right do they have to show up in his property? And if they do show up in his property, and they get gored by his ox or bitten by his dog, then why should there be any liability on the part of the Balabas? And if on the other hand, he's not normally found in... Excuse me. Thank you. He's not normally found in the city, but he's normally found at home. Then my time at the Tanakama. Then Abu said, then the workers have every right to show up at his home. In which case, if they are gored or bitten by his dog, then Lemaisa again. Why would the Tanakama exempt the Balabas from liability? Oh, to which the Gemara said, Lo tzicha. They gave the shriach below shriach. So Abu say, so what's the case? The case over here is where the Balabas is sometimes in the city, but not always in the city, which Rabbi says is another way of saying that there's no real way to predict where exactly the Balabas is going to be. So in a case like that, the workers show up at his home. And watch this. The Kari Ababa. So what happens? Rabbi says, so they go ahead and they knock on the door. They knock on the gate. But Amar Lahu in. And the Balabas says, yes. Yes. So Rabbi says, listen to this. The Shaila is what? How do you interpret yes? Mar Savar in all. Ta. Excuse me, Mar Savar in Ol Ta Mashma. So one opinion, namely, one opinion says that yes means yes what? Yes, come in. Yes, come in. In which case the Balabas is inviting the workers in, which then means what? That if the workers are subsequently damaged, who is responsible for the damage? The Balabas, because he invited the workers in. Umar Savar in Kum Aduch Tach Mashma. And the other one says, when the Balabas says yes, yes means what? Yes means stay where you are I will come to you. And therefore, if the workers subsequently come into the property and are damaged, they assume responsibility for their own damages. So Tanya Kimando Amar in Kumad Duchtoch Mashma. So we'll say there's a brisa that supports the assertion that when the Balabas says yes, yes means yes, stay where you are. To Sanya Pasha Nichnas the Tvas Charami Balabayas. Because the Bryce says the following: a worker walks in to the property of the Balabas, they claim his wages, and he's gored by the ox of the Balabas or beaten by the dog of the Balabas. What's the halacha? Potter. The Balabas is potter for damages. I don't understand. If the worker is there with the rishus of the Balabas and he's gored or he's bitten, then why should the Balabas be potter? Elalav the kari abava. Rather, it must be a case where what? Where ultimately the worker, you know, he knocks on the door. The amrale in, and the balabas said yes. And therefore what happens? Ushmamina in kumad duchtach mashma. That yes means yes, stay where you are, I am coming to you. And I will say that's indeed how the Rambam paskins in this case. That if ultimately, again, you knock on someone's door and they say yes, right? Yes means what? Yes means stay where you are. The Balabas will come to you. In other words, Rabbi says, it's actually a very important halacha. The only time you have the reshus to enter into someone's domain is when they explicitly tell you, please come in. But if all you get is a yes, yes means stay where you are, and ultimately, again, I will come to you. And therefore, the Maisa, if the employee enters in and is damaged, so the employee is responsible for those damages, the Balabas is not. Incredible halacha. Mishnah. Shnei Shavarim. So what says, now we're getting back to a little bit of oxen. So Shnei Shavarim Tamei Shechavlu Zezef. So what's an interesting case. Now, up until now, we've always assumed that you have one ox that's damaging the other, meaning one is the perpetrator, one is the victim. Here the Mishnah says, Shnei Shavarim Tamei Shechavlu Zezef. Two oxen that damage each other. Now, they're both tam oxen, meaning both first-time offenders. So what's the halacha? Zeh mishalmin b'mosar chatzi nezek. So we'll say, so imagine the following case. Remember, what's the halacha? The halacha is that a short time goes ahead and pays chatzi nezek, half damages. So we'll say, in this case over here, let's call it that ox number one is worth 100 zuz, ox number two is worth 200 zuz. So they both damage each other. So we'll say, so remember again, what we do is we do the following. That we look at the extra value of the, we look at the extra value ultimately again of the more expensive ox, and the other damaging ox has to pay half of that additional value. So for example, if one ox is worth 100, one ox is worth 200, so remember the first 100 cancels out because they both damaged 100, we look at the extra 100, and therefore again, the less expensive ox pays for the more expensive ox half of those damages. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, "B'mosar shaman mashe ziku ze shalze yosra al nezakav shalze." So we'll say we assess how much one. Let me clarify this a little bit. The assumption over here in this case is that one of the oxen is being damaged more than the other. So the assumption over here is that the more expensive ox. Well, obviously, one ox is being damaged more than the other. So therefore, shaman maheziko shalzeh, yosra an lezakov shalzeh. I'm reading Rashi. We assess how much more this one was damaged than the other. Uba osar mosar mishali misha hizik, yosra asachati. So we're saying we assess upon the ox that did more damage, 50% ultimately, again, of the additional value of the more expensive ox. Remember, again, a tam is mishali migufo. Right, a tam ox ultimately again is only liable to the amount of the value of the ox itself. So in this case over here, where the oxen damaged one another, we look at we assess the damages of the one who was damaged more, and that damage is capped at 50% of the value of the more expensive ox. Similarly, Shnehan Muadin, if both oxen are Muad, so must remember again, so Muad pays Nezek Shalim, in that case, Mishalmin Bemosar Nezek Shalim. So both say same thing, we'll pay the additional amount. In other words, whatever the additional amount of the value is, they'll have to pay Nezek Shalim of the additional amount. Echad Tam Ve'echad Muad, if one ox was Tam, one ox was Muad, so what's the halacha? Samuad Betam, Mishalim Bemosar Nezek Shalim. So both say, if the Muad ox is the one who visited more damage on the tam ox, then ultimately the muad ox will pay nezek shalim in the additional amount. Because remember again, the assumption over it is there's a certain amount of damages that cancel out. Because remember, they're damaging each other. So whatever the additional damages are, assuming that it was the Muad ox that visited the greater damage upon the Tam ox, the Muad ox will pay the additional amount Nazik Shalim. However, Tam B'Muad, if ultimately the Tam ox visited more damage upon the Muad ox, then Mishalim B'Moser Chatzi Nazik. Then he pays Chatzi Nazik of the additional amount. V'chein Shnei Anoshim Shechavlu Ze Bazeh. Similarly, if two people damaged each other, then what's the halacha? Mishalmin B'Moser Nazik Shalim. Ultimately, and I will say, same idea. Reuven and Shimon damage each other. So let's say again, they both sustain a certain amount of damage. That cancels out. But let's say Reuven goes ahead and damages Shimon an additional $100 above the damage that Shimon visited upon Reuven. So Shimon will have to pay that full $100 of additional Nezek Shalim. Adam b'muad, muad ba'adam. What happens if a person damages a muad animal, or a muad animal damages a person? Mishalim b'mosar nezek shalim. Both say same halacha. You'll remember again the same amount of basic damages that they both sustain is cancelled out. The additional damages will be paid by nezek shalim. Adam b'tam, b'tam ba'adam. If a person damages a tam animal, or a tam animal damages a person, Adam b'tam, mishalim b'mosar nezek shalim. So we'll say, if a person damaged a tam animal, and the damages, that's what? That were visited upon the animal, or greater than the damages visited upon the person. So the person will pay the additional amount in the value of nezek shalim. Tam ba'adam, mishalim b'mosar chatzi nezek. If on the other hand, a tam animal damages a person, then ultimately again, the tam animal will have to pay him the additional amount, only chatzi nezek. Rabbi Akiva says, Af tam shechava ba'adam mishalim b'moser nezek shalim. Rabbi Akiva says that even a tam animal that damaged a person, ultimately again, will have to pay in the additional amounts of nezek shalim. So we'll say, the novelty of this Mishnah is the following. That up until now, we've always assumed that one is the damager and one is the victim. Therefore, that payment has always been one-sided. Now the Mishnah is introducing us to the case of reciprocal responsibility. Bless you. Where ultimately, again, you have either two people, two animals, or a person and animal damaging each other. So the halacha is when two people or two oxen, or when an ox and a person damage each other, the halacha is the shared damages, which means the equal damages they both sustain cancel each other out. What the additional damages that one visits upon the other is essentially assessed by the additional amount of value that one has over the other. How much of that additional value the damager has to pay to the damagee depends on what? Depends on the status of the damager. If the damager is a muad, let's say a muad animal, or a person who's always muad, they'll pay what we call nezek shalim, which means the full amount of the additional value. If the animal is a tam, he'll pay chatzi nezek of that additional value. Says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanon.
Is that true even to the same value? Just one damages one more than the other?
If they're of the same value, if they're of the
same more than the other, so it's a greater loss.
If they're of the same value, but one gets, so again, that'll depend. Because remember, if it's chatzi nezek, if it's a tam, it's mishalim begufo. It's always capped at the value of the damager. If at the end of the day, if it's a muad, so mezek, muad is mishalim even min ha'aliyah, even from personal property. So that'll depend. So the answer to that is, if they're equal value, but still one visits greater damage upon the other, then it depends if it's a tam or a muad. Tam will be capped. You only pay, you're capped at the value of the damager. What is even min aliyah?
Says the damages, do you figure, say I work, I make $100,000 a year, somebody else works, he makes $20,000.
No, that's dalad dvarim. That's something different. That's right now we're talking about nezek. Correct, talking about straight damages. You're correct. When people damage each other, then there's a whole variety of other, you're talking, referring to lost wages. So that's one of the dalad dvarim. This Mishnah is not talking about right now. That we'll deal with separately. Correct, straight out nezek. Says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanon. So we learned in a Braisa, Kamishbat Hazeh Ya'aselo. So also remember the pasuk that the Gemara is quoting over here is the following: Oben Yigach O Bas Yigach. So it's always referring over here in the event that the ox gored a person. So the halacha is Kamishbat Hazeh, or Kamishbat Hazeh Ya'aselo. Like this halacha shall be visited upon him. So says the Gemara, what does this mean? So Tan Rabbanon, Kamishbat Hazeh Ya'aselo. Kamishpat shar bishar Kach mishpat shar ba'adam. Let's say we learn out from there that the same halacha that applies when one ox gores another ox, so too is the halacha when an ox gores a person. What does that mean? Mashar bishar, when one ox gores another ox, tam b'shalim chazi nezek, mua nezek shalim. We'll say first white line, lamik gimel amudalif. So just like when one ox gores another ox, so a tam pays chazi nezek, and a muad pays nezek shalim, complete damages. Af shar ba'adam, so too when a shar damages a person, tam mishalim chatzi nezek, umuad nezek shalim. So both say, so again, the opinion of the Tanakhama is that the halachos concerning an animal that damages are the same, whether the animal damages another animal, or whether the animal damages another person. It's just like a tam, when it damages another animal, it's chayv chatzi nezek, and a muad nezek shalim, so too when an animal damages a person, same idea. If the animal is a tam, chatzi nezek, if the animal is a muad nezek shalim. That's the opinion of Tanakhama. Rabbi Kiva Omer, kamishpat hazeh, kitachton v'lo ke'olyon. Rabbi Akiva says, and then when the Torah says, kamishpat hazeh, it is referring to the halacha that follows and not the halacha that comes before. What does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Ketachton v'lo ke'elyon, mishpat ha-tachton nishtai b'muad, ukra kama b'tam. So Bosh Rabbi Kiva says like this. This halacha of an ox that gores a person is sandwiched in between two other halachas. Right before it, the Torah brings down the halacha of tam. The halacha of tam is that an animal pays chatzi nezek. And right after it, the Torah brings down the laws of muad, which is what? Where an animal pays nezek shalim. Rabbi Akiva says, kamishpat hazeh, when an ox gores a person, kamishpat hazeh, it has this halacha. This halacha refers to what? Kitachton, to the halacha that follows it, meaning what? Muad, and not the halacha that precedes it. In other words, that according to Rabbi Akiva, whenever an ox gores a person, the ox is always treated like a muad, and therefore what? Pays what? Nezek shalim, and not like a tam to pay chatzi nezek. So the Gemara says, yochal mishalim min ha'aliyah. So we'll say, so understand, when you deal with muad damages, so there are two things. Not only is it nezek shalim, but remember, muad also pays from the best properties of the damager. So I might have thought in this case also, when an animal damages a person, if you're going to treat it like a muad that it has to pay nezek shalim, maybe it should also have to pay min ha'aliyah from the best properties. Tamud lomar ya'aselo. Therefore, the pasuk says, you shall do for him migufa mishalim. No. Well, in this case, where the animal damages a person, so the liability of the animal is capped at the value of the animal itself, ve'inu mishalim min ha'aliyah. But the owner of the damaging animal need not pay from his best property. But Rabbanon, the Rabbanon will say, zeh lamali. So both according to the Rabbanon, ultimately again, what do they learn from this word zeh? Oh, lepotro me'arba dvarim. Both say, listen to this. The Rabbanon say, that when what? If my animal damages Reuven, so let's say for a moment, so the Rabbana will say, Zeh comes to teach me that I'm only chayev for damages, but not chayev for the other four categories of damages. In other words, ripui, sheves, boshes, and sar. The other four categories of damages that we've discussed before. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva. So, interestingly enough, according to the Rabbana, Zeh means that I'm chayev, if a person damages another person, I'm chayev in all the different categories of damages. But if my animal damages someone, I might be chayiv nezek shalim. Maybe yes, maybe no. But lemaisa again, I'm potter for the other categories of damages. For Rabbi Akiva, the poacher may arbit dvar minoli. According to Rabbi Akiva, where does he know that if my ox damages a person, I'm chayiv nezek, but potter in the other categories of damages? Nafkalei meish ki yitin mum bamito. Because when the Torah speaks about the obligation to pay the four categories of damages, the Torah uses the lashon of when a person will injure his fellow. Ish ba'amito, v'lo shar ba'amito. The four damages are only applicable when a person damages his fellow, but not when the shar damages his fellow. For the Rabbanon will say, imehahi, if it was from that case, ha ba'aminat sar l'chudei, I might have thought that when the shar damages his fellow, maybe he's pater from tsar. Maybe he's pater from tsar. Look at Rashi. Rashi's hanimili tsar luchudei mishum dlo chaser beimamona. Because both remember again, tsar, the payment for pain and suffering, often is not necessarily something that actively diminishes the value of the individual. So I would have thought that when an ox goes in and damages a person, he's chayiv in everything except for tsar. Aval ripoy v'sheves ema litenle, but perhaps ripoy and sheves I have to pay him. Kamash lo, no, that is not the case. So we'll say, so therefore again, halacha lemaisa. Halacha l'maisa, what comes out over here is the following. That in the event that an animal damages a person, one thing is clear, which is we have a machlokes, Rabbi Akiva, ultimately again, and the Tanakama, about how much you have to pay. So the Tanakama will say that the halachos of an ox that damages a person are the same thing as an ox that damages another ox. And if the animal is tam, ultimately he pays the person chatzi nezek, and if he's more, he pays the person nezek shalem. Rabbi Akiva says, no, any time that an animal damages a person, an animal is always going to be chayim nezek shalem. So that's the machlokes of the Gemara. One thing that everyone agrees with, however, is what? That when an ox damages a person, the only thing the owner of the ox is chayim for is what? Is nezek, but it's pater midalud dvarim. It's pater from the other four categories of damages. Says the Mishnah, shor shavemana shenagach shor shavemasayim. Supposed to listen to this. If a shor that is worth 100 went ahead and gored a shor that was worth 200, ve'ein hanavela yafeklum, and let's say the carcass itself ultimately again is valueless. So we'll say this is going to be a case ultimately of a tam. So this is a tam ox that was worth 100, went ahead and gored another ox that was worth 200. Now in this case over here, now the carcass itself is valueless. So what is the Mishnah Paskin? No tel es hashar. So we'll remember, what's the halacha? If an ox that was worth 100 gores an ox that was worth 200, and the goring ox was a tam, how much is the goring ox chayiv? Chatzi nezek, which is what in this case will be what? Will be 100. Remember, the ox that was damaged was worth 200. Chatzi nezek of 200 is 100. Now, in this case over here, so the carcass is meaningless. The carcass is worthless. Therefore, the Mishnah says in a case like this, the owner of the damaged ox can now seize the damaging ox as payment for damages. Because remember, again, the value of the damaging ox is 100, which corresponds to half the value of the ox that was killed. And therefore, lemaisa, again, the owner who sustained the damages is permitted just to seize the damaging ox in satisfaction of the debt. So, masnisin money. So, we'll say, who's the opinion? Does that Mishnah reflect? So, Rabbi Kivahi. Rabbi Akiva, what Rabbi Akiva say? Disanyo, Yusham Hashar Bebeis, and Rabbi Shmuel. So most Rabbi Shmuel holds that when an ox does damage, so what you have to do is you have to bring the oxen ultimately again to Beis Din to assess damages. Look at Rashi. Yusham Shar. So Rashi says, Hamasik Bebeis Din. We bring the damaging ox to Beis Din, and Beis Din goes ahead and assesses the value. Yiting lo mazik Moz de mehashar shuchatsi nisko uveshavet mana shenagach leshavet masayim vein hanavela shamaklum kamari. So we'll say, listen to this. So therefore, the Brisa says that when an ox does damage, so what we have to do is we bring the damaging ox ultimately to, we bring all the oxen to Beis Din, and Beis Din goes ahead and makes an assessment. Now Rashi understands over here that Dafko are bringing the damaging ox to Beis Din, and ultimately we tell the Mazik that he has to go ahead and pay the Nizak, pay the damaged party, half damages. Rabbi Kiva, I'm supposed to say, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the point Rabbi Shmuel is trying to make over here is that in order for damages to be assessed, the animal must be brought to Beis Din. There must be an official Beis Din assessment. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Huchlat Hashar. Rabbi Kiva on the other hand says, Rashi, Huchlat Hashar, Hashar Atzmo Yikach. So also Rabbi Kiva says, look, if it's clear, meaning if the parties understand all of the values, and therefore, for example, Ox A, which is worth 100, goes ahead and damages and kills Ox B, which was worth 200. And for some reason, again, we know for a fact that the carcass itself is worthless. So in that case, Rabbi Akiva says the parties do not have to show up in Beis Din. And what? The damaged party could simply seize the damaging shor in satisfaction of the debt. So b'maikam ilfigi, what are they arguing about? Rabbi Yishmael savar bal chofu bezuzi hu demaskile. So we'll say Rabbi Yishmael holds that when ox A damages ox B, so ultimately, again, the owner of ox A owes a debt. ox B has actually no claim, owner of ox B, owner B we'll call him, has absolutely no claim against the actual shar A. He has a monetary claim against the owner of ox A. But in order to go ahead and be entitled to that monetary claim, what has to happen? He has to go to Beis Din. Rabbi Akiva Savar, Shutzvinenu. Rabbi Akiva says, no, once ox A injures ox B, so by definition, the owner of ox B has a monetary claim in ox A itself. He's considered to be a shutav, he's considered to be a partner with the owner of ox A in ox A. So the Gemara says, and ultimately, again, they're arguing the following pasuk. What does the pasuk say? Bless you. Now, under normal circumstances, what happens over here is they will sell the living ox and they will divide up the proceeds. Rabbi Shmuel Saber lebeidina kamaser rachmana. So Rabbi Shmuel understands that who is it referring to when it says they will sell the ox? The they refers to the owner of the ox and Beis Din. So you go to Beis Din, and ultimately, so remember, what's happening to Rabbi Shmuel is Rabbi Shmuel says that when ox A injures ox B, the owner of B has a monetary claim. He doesn't have a specific claim against the ox of ox A. He has a monetary claim. Therefore, the Torah tells Beis Din, listen, you have to oversee the sale of ox A and the distribution of the monies. Rabbi Akiva Savar, Lenizak Umazik Masyulu Rahmana. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, no, Umachru refers to who? The damager and the damagee, right? The damager and the damaged party, they both have a claim in the damaging ox, and it's up to them to go ahead and work out the money. So my bin, I boss, what's the practical difference in these two opinions? Here's the practical difference. Hikdisho Nizak. Oh, boss, so listen to this. Let's say the damaged party. So watch this. So animal A, so I'll call him Shar A, which is worth 100 zuz, damages Shar B, kills Shar B, and the carcass is worthless. Whatever the Metzias is, the carcass is worthless. Then what happens? The owner, right, so we'll call him owner B, goes ahead and is Makdish animal A. He's Makdish animal A. He's Makdish Shar A. So we'll say, what's the halacha? So Ika Benahu, Hikdish Nizak Ika Benahu. So listen to this. So if the damaged party is now Makdish Shar A, that's the nafkamina. How's that the nafkamina? So look at Rashi. Hikdish Nizak Ika Benahu, the Rabbi Shmuel lo Kaddish Le, the Rabbi Akiva Kaddish. So listen to this. According to Rabbi Shmuel, so ultimately the damaged party really has no power to be makdish the animal. Why? Because he actually has no rights in the animal. He has a monetary claim and a right to the animal. According to Rabbi Akiva, what's the halacha? According to Rabbi Akiva, ultimately, technically, he has a right in the animal as well. And therefore, if he's makdish the animal, then lemaisa, again, it will work. To which the Gemara says, "Bamei Rav Miram Nachman." So Rav said, "Rav asked Rav Nachman, Machru Mazik." We'll say, "What happens in the following case? Animal A gores and kills animal B." And again, same case. Animal A is worth 100. Animal B is worth 200. Animal A is a first-time offender. He's a tam. What happens now? The owner of A sells the animal. So is such. So what's the status of that? Say, "Machru Mazik." Rabbi Shmuel Mahu. So we'll say, what is the halacha of Rabbi Shmuel? Remember, Rabbi Shmuel is the one who says that the damaged party has a financial claim against owner A, but does not have an actual claim in the animal itself. Kevin Rabbi Shmuel Bachofu, Vizuzihu Demaskele Machor. On one hand, you could say that according to Rabbi Shmuel, since the damaged party only has a claim, it's a monetary claim against owner A, but doesn't have an actual stake in the animal, therefore, again, owner A could sell his animal if he wants to. He'll own the money, but he can sell the animal. Or do we say on the base, Kevin the Mishabed Le Lenizak Lav Kol Kamine. Or perhaps we'll say that what? Since the damaged party, i.e. owner B, ultimately again has a claim against the damager, perhaps the damager doesn't have the right to just simply go and sell his animal. Amar Le Eina Mahar. To which he responded, you're right, the halacha is that if Rabosei, if in this case the owner of animal A tries to sell his animal after it did damage to animal B, before the owners had the opportunity to settle up, the sale is void. Why is the sale void? Apparently it appears to be because the owner of animal B has a claim in as a claim against, not just against the owner of B, of A, but again, but the actual animal A as well. But Tanya, but we learned, Machar o Machar, Rabbi said, yet we learned that Lamaisa against such a sale in fact stands. And furthermore, again, Choser v'govo. So we'll say what it means. So, but Tanya, I'm sorry, here's the kasha. The kasha is, but yet the Braisa says, Rabbi say, that's what? That Halacha Lamaisa again, if the owner of animal A sells animal A, that indeed the sale is good, to which the Gemara says, Choser v'gobeu. It means it's true. The sale is good, but what? But the owner of animal B, the now deceased animal B, has the right to go and collect animal A from the person ultimately who purchased him. So we'll say, to which the Gemara says, V'chimei achar shechazer v'gobeu. So we'll say, if that's the case, that the owner of B, right, we'll call him owner B, has the right to go and collect animal A, even after the owner of A has sold it to someone else. So what does it mean when the Braisa says that the sale of A to another party is a valid sale? Oh, the Radia. We'll say, listen to this. What it means is the following. Listen to this case. So remember again, here we go. A damaged B. A damaged B, right? And again, to keep things simple, A was worth 100, B was worth 200, B is gone, no carcass, nothing. So the A is the tam, so therefore A is going to have to pay B 100. So we'll say, so what are we saying now? Really again, B has the right to go ahead and seize A. What happens? The owner of A goes in and sells him now to C, another party. So say, what's the halacha? So the Braisa says the sale is a valid sale, but B has the right to go and seize the animal from C. But if B has the right to seize the animal from C, then what? Then it would appear that the sale from A to C, in fact, is not a good sale. So what do you mean when you say it is a good sale? What it means is that when B shows up at C's house to seize the animal that he bought from A, then and what happens? And this whole time, C's been using it to go out and plow his field. So B doesn't have the right to say, listen, you've been using my animal for the last week to plow your field. There's $1,000 of value there. You have to pay me. Kamashlan, B can collect that, B can collect that fee from C. Because Lamaisa, again, although B has the right to collect it from C, who bought it from A, Lamaisa, again, B cannot go ahead and recapture funds for the use of the animal that B used it from the sale from A. Good? See. Hey, C is from the C right now. Right? Good. So again. So Lamaisa again. I was trying to make it more complicated. So the ultimate thing I will say is that B, the damaged party, has the right to seize the animal that did the damage, even if the damager sold it to another party. And the novelty is that even though the other party that bought the animal from the damager, right, has been using it to plow his field. See, most, like, under normal circumstances, the halacha is like this. And let me illustrate this differently. If you have something that belongs to me, here's something that belongs to me. You have my ox, and you use my ox to plow your field. I have the right to charge you for the use of my animal, because you used my animal without proper rishus. I have the right to charge you for that service. In this case over here, the Gemara says, when A sold it to C, as much as now B has the right, B the damaged party has the right to show up at C's house and take that animal, B does not have the right to charge C for the use of the animal that C was using it since the sale from A. Shmamina, lava umocher metaltolin. So we'll say, what do you see from here? You see from here that Lamaisa, if you went ahead, and let's say again, you borrowed money from someone, and I will say, what happens? And let's say again, and let's say the borrower went ahead and sold off metaltolin, based in gobin lo mehem. So we'll say, see, here's what's interesting about this. The assumption is that an animal is metaltolin. So now what you're saying is the following. Remember again, here's what we know. A owes B money, right? Because A's animal damaged B's animal. So A owes B money. What we're seeing now is that A sold the animal to another party, C, and therefore, again, B, the damaged party, has the right to go to C and take the animal in satisfaction of his debt. And Abosai, now that doesn't sound right to us. Why? Because in general, Abosai, if you owe someone money, so your real property secures the debt, but in general, movable property is not liable for seizure. In other words, if I go ahead and I borrow money from someone, I'm a debtor, I owe money to someone, and I sell off movable property, generally a creditor does not have the right to go and seize, does not have the right to seize sold movable property. The most you have the right to do is what? Seize karka, real property. But yet here it seems to be saying that if a debtor goes in and sells off movable property, that the creditor has a right to go after that. To which the Gemara says, no. The difference over here is shiny hasam. The command da asa apotiki dami. Both say this case is different. Why? Because the shar has the status of an apotiki. Both say, what's an apotiki? Remember, apotiki is a contraction for the word apotehei, which means what? If I borrow money from someone and I designate the particular item as this is going to be the source of your repayment. So both say, again, that's called an apotiki. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is in this case, the damaging animal, animal A, has the status of an apotiki. If a debtor, goes out and sells off an apotiki, then again, in that case, the creditor has the right to go after the apotiki. So the Gemara says, "V'ha'am Rava, asa evan apotiki umachra balchov gobehimenu." The Rabbi Rava said that ultimately, if a debtor went ahead and made his evan an apotiki, and then subsequently sold off the apotiki, the balchov, the creditor, has the right to go after that apotiki, but shor apotiki, but if a person designated his shar, his act as an apotiki, as source of repayment, and then what happens? The debtor, umachra, sold it off, ein balchov go vehimenu. Ultimately, again, the creditor can't go after it. To which the Gemara says, Eved my taima. So why is Rabbi said that if the debtor designated his Eved as the apotiki, as a source of repayment, and then the debtor subsequently sells off his Eved, why is it that the creditor has the right to go after that item? Mishum de isle kala. Because Rabbi said there's a call. People know, right, there's a call about an Eved being designated as an apotiki, and therefore we assume that when a person bought that Eved, he knew full well that was an encumbered Eved, and therefore again, he has to suffer the loss. On the other hand, the Gemara says, "My time is the isle kala." To which the Gemara is supposed to say, "That's why when someone buys a shar, so all shvarim, all oxen look the same." So to say ultimately again that this ox was an apotiki, Salam. I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't mean to offend anyone with that statement. So each shar is unique. Each shar is unique and special. So ultimately, again, when a person goes ahead and sells the shar, so ultimately, again, the shar can't have the status of a real apotiki because the buyer has no idea, ultimately, again, that this shar is unique. To which the one says, no. Hi, Nami, Kevan de Nagach. Kala islay, the tura naghana karile. So as to which the Gemara says, no, this shar also has unique identity. Why? Because as soon as a shar gores, a shar like that gets a reputation. So because it gets a reputation, people know it as a shar naghana, and therefore the maisa, again, its identity as an apotiki, so to speak. Now remember, this is an unwilling apotiki, because in this case over here, A damaged B, and therefore again, by definition, in this case, A becomes an apotiki for the repayment of the damages ultimately of B. Therefore again, when A goes ahead and sells the shar to C, B has the right to go ahead and show up at C's door, take that shar in satisfaction of his debt. The one caveat is what? That whatever usage C has gotten from that animal in the interim, B has no right to claim payment for that usage. So Tani Rav Tachlifa Barma Arba Kamed Rabbi Avo. So Rav Tachlifa Barma Arba taught the following from Rabbi Avo. Machru in Machar, Higdisho Mukdash. So Rabbi Avo said that ultimately, again, Rabbi Avo said, this is talking about over here, if the owner of A sold the animal, ultimately, again, such a sale is not valid. Rashi says, so Machra ain't a Machar, the sale is not valid, so Higdisho Mukdash. Ultimately, but if he consecrates the animal is hektish. So the Gemara says, Machroman, who's selling the animal? So we'll say again, we're assuming that same case. A damaged B. And we're talking about a case up here where A is worth 100, B is worth 200, A is a tam, there's no carcass left to speak of, and therefore again, the value of A will satisfy the damages for B. So who sold the animal? Ilema mazik machro. If you want to say that ultimately the damager, in other words, A sold his shar, so the Gemara says, if you want to say mazik machro in machar, if you want to say that the damager sold his animal, now the Bryce is telling me that such a sale is not good. So money, whose opinion is this? If I Rabbi Akiva, he damar hochlat hashar. Because Rabbi Kiva's owner says, Rabbi said that in a case like this, B has the right simply to seize A in satisfaction of the damages. V'ikdisho mukdash. So Rabbi said, what about the second statement that says that if he was makdish the animal, the hekdish works, asan Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi said this ultimately again would seem to reflect the view of Rabbi Yishmael, who says the Amar Yusham Hashar Bebezdin. That ultimately again Rabbi said gives. So remember, if you go to Rabbi Yishmael would say that A has the right to be Makdish his animal. Why? Because it's his. So Rabbi said, see what's happening over here. What the Gemara is saying is the only way this makes sense. If you're saying it's the Mazik, if you're saying it's A who's doing all this stuff, see if you say that when A sells the animal, he has the right to do so. So Rabbi said that makes sense. If what? I'm sorry. If you're saying that it's A, the mazik is not the animal. So when the Braisa says it's not a good sale, that's ultimately Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva will say that the animal really belongs to B. If everyone you say he made it makdish, if he was makdish shit, the hegdish works, that would have to reflect the view of Rabbi Yishmael, who says that ultimately this process has to be done by Beis Din. B does not own the animal. B has a monetary claim. A owns the animal. And therefore, when A is makdish shit, ultimately, again, A has the absolute right to do so. Ela nizak machro. Rather, what you have to say ultimately is it's the damaged party who sold the shar, who sold A. And therefore, again, machro ain't a machar. When you say that if he sold it, it's not a good sale, money Rabbi Shmuel. So, Rabbi, who's the opinion is that? That's Rabbi Shmuel. Because Rabbi Shmuel will say that the damaged party does not own the animal. Therefore, you can't sell that which you do not own. Hikdisho mukdash asan Rabbi Akiva. And ultimately, Rabbi said the case of where we say that if he was makdishit, the hekdish works, that has to go according to Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva ultimately says that since the nizak technically owns the animal, he has the right to take it, therefore the hekdish status works. To which the Gemara says, the olam mazik v'divrei hakol. So I'll say, ultimately, what we're going to say is, we're going to set this up as a case of where the mazik, it's the damaging party, i.e. A, who's selling and being makdish. And listen to this, v'divrei hakol. Machra eino machra. So we'll say, when we say that if the mazik sells the animal, it's not going to work. Afilu Rabbi Yishmael. We'll say, that's going to be true, even according to Rabbi Yishmael. Why? Doha mishabdi le nizak. Because we'll say, even Rabbi Yishmael who holds, that ultimately, again, the nizak, the damaged party, has a claim against the animal, doesn't own the animal. That claim is enough to what? To prevent A from selling his animal. See, even according to Rabbi Shmuel, says that the nizak, the damaged party, doesn't own the animal, but lamaisa, again, he owns enough of an interest to block a sale. On the other hand, hikdisho mukdash, and when we say that if he's makdish the animal, it works. Afilu Rabbi Akiva, mishem Rabbi Avohu. Dram Rabbi Avohu, gezeirah shem yomru hekdish yotzei b'lo pidyon. Suppose I listen to this. The Gemara is going to suggest over here that when the mazik is makdish the animal, suppose say the hekdish doesn't really work. But why? Right? Why? Because ultimately, again, the mazik cannot be makdish something that doesn't fully belong to him. And since at the end of the day, the damaged party has an interest in the animal, therefore you can't be makdish something you don't fully own. So what does the Braisa mean when it says that if he's makdish it works? It means, Rabbi Osai, that he's going to have to give a token donation to hekdish in order to quote-unquote redeem the animal. In other words, when you're makdish something, even if the hekdish designation does not work, in order that people not take hekdish lightly, you have to perform some semblance of pidyon, some semblance of redemption. So you'll have to pay a little something to hekdish in order to quote-unquote do a ceremonial redemption of that animal from hekdish. Fine. Tan Rabbanan. But let's go a little bit weiter. Short tam shehizik. If you have a short tam that did het nezek, Achlo Awad Bedin Machro. So listen to this. So now remember, A, same case, A gores B. A is a tam. Before they have an ability to go out and take the matter to Beis, then what happens? A sells his shor. A sells his shor. So we'll say, what's the halacha? So Achlo Awad Bedin Machro Machar. If before the case came to Beis, then the sale stands. Hikdisho Mukdash. Similarly again, if A was Makdish the animal, the gore, the A, if A was Makdish his animal, that gore B, but before the case came to Beis Din, the hekdish stands. Shachto benasna b'matana. Similarly again, if he shechs the animal, and what? And he gives away the meat as a matana. Masha asa asui. Whatever is done, is done. B has no recourse. However, misha amad b'din. But Rabbi say, once the case is brought before the Beis Din, so machra ina machar, if A tries to sell his animal, so the sale is void. Hikdisho ina mukdash. Ultimately, if he tries to makdish the animal, it's not going to work. Shachta benasna matana. If he shechs the animal and gives a matana, also lo asav lo klum. Ultimately, again, what he did is absolutely meaningless. Kadmo. So we'll say again. See, here the Gemara is making an interesting distinction. We're making a distinction now between when A sold Makdish, shechted his animal prior to the initiation of court proceedings, in which case whatever he does is done. It's his animal again. No case has been initiated. Therefore, there are no restrictions as to what A can do with his animal versus once the proceedings have been initiated. In that case, again, then A is limited from doing anything with the animal. Kadmu ba'ali chobos v'gbiu. So we'll say, if let's say again, A has creditors, and the creditors come along and what? Seize the animal. Bein chav atshelo hizik, bein hizik atshelo chav. Whether the debt was incurred before the goring, or whether the debt was incurred after the goring, lo asa v'lo klum. Ultimately, again, I will say their actions are absolutely meaningless. Why? Because ultimately, again, we're going to define exactly what this term means. Because ultimately, again, they are only, right? Means that they're only ultimately, again, they are only get paid ultimately from the guf of the animal. Muad, we're going to define exactly what that statement means. Muad shehizik, ultimately again, if a muad goes in and does damages, bein sh'amad bedin, bein shlo amad bedin, they both say whether or not the court proceedings were initiated or not, then what's going to be the halacha? So, I'm sorry, bein sh'amad bedin, shlo amad bedin, machro machar, so they both say ultimately again, the sale is a valid sale, hikdisho mukdash, again remember this means if A sold his animal, the sale is a good sale. Ultimately, again, if he consecrated his animal, it's consecrated. Shachto v'nasno b'matana. If he shechted and gifted away the meat, masha asa asui. Kadmo bali chovos v'gbiu. If ultimately creditors came along and seized the animal in satisfaction of a debt that A owed to someone else. So ultimately, again, bein chav atshelo hizik. Whether the debt came before the damages, bein hizik atshelo chav, or the damages came before the debt, masha asa asui, whatever is done is done. Lefi she'ein mishtalim ela min ha'aliyah. Because ultimately, again, I will say what? Because when it comes to muad, you are chayiv min ha'aliyah. Min ha'aliyah means what? That remember for a muad, you have to pay even beyond the value of the animal itself. So we'll say, here, interestingly enough, what the Gemara is doing is making a two-pronged distinction. Number one, making a distinction between the initiation of court proceedings and before the initiation of court proceedings. So it appears, again, that Lamaisa, again, if prior to the initiation of court proceedings, ultimately, again, pretty much the owner of the animal could do what he wants. After the initiation of proceedings, he is capped. A secondary distinction will be ultimately between a tam and a muad. The Rebbe says, just go a little bit further, then we'll stop. Amr mar, machro machra. So we'll say again, remember, let's go back for just a moment. So we said before that with, let's say, a tam animal, if you went ahead and you sold the animal, once he sold the animal, what if he sold it, it's sold. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? L'radia. Well, so that means like what we said before, namely, that if A sold his animal, and what? And let's say he sold it to C, and now B is going to ultimately go back and seize that animal back from C in satisfaction of the damages done to him. And in the interim, what's been happening over here? C has been plowing his heel with this animal, so B has no right to charge C for the usage of the animal. Similarly, hikdisho mukdash, what does it mean if you consecrate the animal is consecrated? Mishud Rabbi Abo. That ultimately means Rabbi Abo. Namely, again, what does that mean? That, remember, although technically the animal is not fully consecrated, what it means is that when B is going to take back the animal, so there has to be a quote-unquote ceremonial redemption to give something to Hekdish. Shachto v'nastam b'matana, if you shechted the animal and ultimately you gifted away the meat, masha asa asui, what is done is done. So says the Gemara, bishlama nastam b'matana, masha asa asui, so I understand, if you gave it away b'matana, so what's done is done. So the Gemara says, l'ridia, that refers ultimately again for Adia. For ultimately, you can't recapture any of the cost for services. Ela shachto, leisei v'leshtali mibisari. So we'll say, I don't understand. If let's say A went ahead and shechted the animal, so B could still recapture damages. How? Just take the meat. Right? Meaning the animal is there, so why can't they just take it? The sanyo chai, eimi ela chai. So also listen to this, because after all we learned, I only know that the damaged party can recapture damages from the damaging animal if the animal is still alive. I know that even if the damaging animal was shechted, the damaged party could still recapture expenses or damages through the carcass, through the body of the shechted animal. Talmud lomar, umachras ashar mikamakom, because the pasuk says they shall sell the shor, which indicates that's what Rabbi said, that the damaged party can recapture expenses even from the meat of the shechted animal. Amar Rav Shizvi. Lo nitzrocha ela lefacha shchita. So Rabbi say, ultimately, again, what it teaches us is that let's say, Rabbi say, here's the interesting case. Let's say again, Lemaisa, listen to this. A gored B. And A was worth 100, B was worth 200, A was a tam. So remember again, B, the carcass is worthless. So what are we going to say in a straight case? What's going to be the halacha? So A's animal will go to B for compensation for damages. Now what happens? A goes in and shechts his animal. So we'll say what happens? There's what we call pachas shchita. Pachas shchita means that we assume that a shechted animal, by definition, is worth less than a living animal. Even though Rabbi say all the same pieces are there, by definition, there is a diminution in value of a shechted animal over a living animal. The Gemara is now telling us that what? That Lemaisa, again, B, bears the loss of the diminution of a shechted animal versus a live animal. See, even though, again, he could take all of the meat as payment, or the entire carcass as payment, Lemaisa, again, he bears the loss, the difference in value between a living animal and a dead animal. We'll say one more line. This tells us, Hamazik Shibudo Shachavero Potter. What this teaches us is what? Is that Lemaisa, again, if you damage something that your friend has a lien on, oh, and therefore what? Diminished the value of the property upon which there rests a lien, the damager ultimately is potter. I'm both saying now the novelty in that is the following. In other words, if let's say we're going to see Reuven has a lien against something, and Shimon the debtor, damages that property. Now again, the property is still there, in its essence is still there, but the value is different. You see from here that what? That the damager is potter. Even though the damager has caused the lessening of value, since the item itself is still in existence, ultimately, again, the damager is potter from value. So, okay, fine, one more line. So the Gemara says, pshita, that's obvious. Ma'u de tema, hasam hu de amrele, lo chasaticha velo midi, de amrele zeka ba'amahu de shakliminach. So, boss, in the case of where Reuven shechts the animal, so he says to Shimon, right, A shechts the animal, he says to B, listen, I didn't really cause you any damage, right? The animal is still here. What's the only difference between the animal 5 minutes ago and now? Breath, ruach, right? The animal was breathing, now it's not breathing. But Lemaisa, it's the same exact animal. I didn't cause you any loss. But I will say, under normal circumstances, if you go ahead and you damage the item upon which your friend has a lien, and there is significant damage, I would have thought that perhaps the individual is chayiv. Kamash malon, no. Kamash malon, that is not the case. Kamash malon, that if you're mazik the shibud, something that your friend has a lien on, as long as the item itself is still in existence, lemaisa, again, the damager is not going to be chayiv. So ha nami rabba amra. So we'll say, rabba already said this before. Damar rabba hasarv shtaros shachavero potter. But say, rabba is actually very interesting. If you burn the documents of your friend, so we'll say, again, let's say somebody is holding loan documents. And what happened? So somebody comes along and burns those documents. So we'll say, what are you essentially burning? So I burn Reuven's loan documents. I'm burning the documents that give him the power of collection. That's his shibud, that's his lien. I'm potter. Why am I potter? I'm potter because at the end of the day, I didn't cause him direct damage. I damaged his collection abilities. I damaged his lien. So the Gemara says, Ma'udu tema, hasam hu da amar lei, naira ba'ama kaloi minach. So I would say in that case, he's potter. Why am I potter when I burn Reuven's loan documents? Because what did I say to Reuven? Look, what did I burn? What did I burn? I burn paper. Aval heichad dechaper boro shichunu ma'aros dechayiv. But Rabbi say, if I go ahead and I start digging ditches in a piece of land that Reuven has a lien against, then Reuven has recourse against me. Why? Because I'm actively ruining. I'm actively ruining the item that he has the lien against. Kamash malon dehahacha kiman dechaper ba boro shichunu ma'aros. Dummy, the Ka'amar Masha Ase. But yet we see from here that what? That Rabosai, when Reuven goes ahead, when A shechts the animal that B has a lien against, Rabosai, that's the equivalent to what? To digging ditches in land that a creditor has a lien against, and yet what do we see? We see that lemaisa again, the debtor is not chayev for causing these damages. So we'll say that you see from here that even when you actively damage an item that the creditor has a lien against, still the creditor has no recourse against the debtor, as long as the item itself is still extant. Therefore, in this case over here, even though when A goes in and shechts the damaging animal, he's causing a lessening in the value, but since the meat is still there, the animal, the body is still there, ultimately A says to B, take your compensation from here. And even though, again, this animal is worthless, that's called mazik shibudo shachadero. When you damage the lien of your friend, you are putter, as long as the item itself is still in existence, even if the value of that item is less. All right, so we'll stop over here. We'll pick up over here. Last few lines.
Vomit disease, an animal has tremendous value.
Say that again,
I'm saying, one flowering season, then the lion...